Welcome to The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
And today's topic is all about the issue of comorbidity. Good morning. How are you doing today, Richard?
Doing well. Now I'm doing well.
Now you're doing well? We just finished recording our morning show. So if you're listening to this and you haven't yet seen our morning show, you should check that out. It's been a lot of fun. We just finished our first week.
I encourage you to look at those. They're nice, short, thoughtful pieces that you can take throughout the day.
Yeah.
Use them.
I tell you, the short part is the most difficult for me because some of the things that we talk about, I find myself wanting to explain more or to kind of go a little bit more into it. But that's what this podcast is all about. This podcast is all about, you know, going into a little bit more depth about things and explaining things a little bit more.
Right.
Which brings us to the topic that we're going to talk about today, which is comorbidity.
Comorbidity.
So this week I've been you call it a conversation,
discussion?
But it's on Facebook, so it's not really a conversation. Mm. It's sort of a correspondence.
Well, a listener called or texted or something,
right?
And had a question about comorbidity.
Comorbidity, right?
A really good question.
Yeah.
And as we were discussing what our response should look like, we were structuring our response to the listener's question, and we said, wow, this is something we should talk about on one of our shows.
Right. So we're going to talk about comorbidity today, and it's a really interesting topic because depending on the population that you're thinking about, and so one of the things we're going to differentiate is adult versus child, depending on the population that you're talking about, comorbidity may be a massive issue. Maybe a significant issue, and there really is a challenge in differentiating different conditions and different disorders and things like that. So,
and comorbidity is one of those issues that, as psychologists or psychiatrists, it's something we deal with every day.
I mean, right,
we talk about it, it's a normal part of our life, but we forget that many people don't know the concept of comorbidity.
Right. So go ahead and
take
it, explain it a little bit.
What to do about it?
Yeah. You know?
Comorbidity just means you have more than one condition.
Right.
In our business, in psychology, you could have an addictive disorder. You know, you could be addicted to something, and you might also be depressed.
Right.
Okay. And so there are two issues to deal with. And from a clinical standpoint, comorbid conditions pose a unique challenge because the professional, the therapist, the counselor has to be dealing with both,
right?
Either both at the same time or deal with one and then move on to the other.
Right.
So it takes another level of skill. The challenge for the patient is you're dealing with two problems.
Right.
And so it's going to take a little longer. It's going to take a little more, maybe take a little more work to get it right because you're dealing with two or more conditions.
Right.
We find this especially challenging in children.
Right.
Because with adults, you can explain to them what's going on. You know, look, you have two problems here. We're going to deal with this one and then this one. This is much harder to explain to a child.
Right. Yeah, and we're going to get into that a little bit more detail just because I think that parents have a really difficult time appreciating why things change when you're working with children so much. And so we'll explain that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there was a great explanation of what comorbidity means because I think a lot of people get confused because they're sort of the root morbid there. And so they think, you know, death or dying or something like that. Right. And really it just means that there's multiple conditions happening or diagnostic conditions happening at the same time.
Right. Yeah, but it's a different... There's mortality and there's morbidity. Mortality, of course, has something to do with dying. Morbidity is... You have some condition,
right?
An illness or a condition,
right?
To address,
right? So let's start out by talking about what comorbidity means in children. And I think that one of the most challenging things with making diagnoses, mental health diagnoses in children, is that we really don't have a good report from the child,
right?
You know, our ability to identify what's going on with a child really is limited by the child's vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
If a child can explain what's happening and right. you know, when these differences happen, and so it's not just vocabulary, I guess it's also insight.
Mm-hmm.
If they are able to identify and explain how and when different feelings and symptoms occur, then the diagnostic process is much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're sort of left to interpret what's going on right. on the inside based upon what we see on the outside.
That's right.
And that's very challenging.
Kids don't articulate as clearly. They don't know how to label emotions.
Right.
They say, well, I was upset. Well, do you mean you were anxious? Do you mean you were angry? Do you mean you were frustrated? What do you mean by upset? And frequently they don't have the words to describe the specific emotion that they're feeling.
Right, yeah. right. So it makes it much more challenging
right.
because as we look at our diagnoses, our diagnostic criteria for different things, there is tremendous overlap,
yeah.
and it's all based upon interpretation.
Right.
So just a quick example that I often use with families is the issue of, you know, we have ADHD and oppositional defiant disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use those, and not that I'm a big fan of a diagnosis of oppositional defiant disorder, but that will be for another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But if we think about some of the key symptoms there, one of the key symptoms for ADHD is fails to follow directions even when he knows what the expectations are, right? Well, in oppositional defiant disorder, we have refuses to comply, refuses to follow directions. Well, depending on the parent's perspective, we may have either ADHD, that either may be a symptom contributing to ADHD, or it could be a symptom contributing to oppositional defiant disorder.
Right, right.
The symptoms, the behaviors themselves, are very, very similar.
Yeah, the same, right?
Mm-hmm. If we throw into the mix the issue of anxiety, okay, so anxiety makes you hesitate, it makes you reluctant to do something unless you know and you're absolutely sure what you're going to do. Well, once again, we could have a situation where a kid doesn't comply, but it could be because of anxiety as opposed to being oppositional, as opposed mm-hmm. to being distractible or right. inattentive.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that is the same behavior, but the root cause of that behavior could be any number of things.
That's right. And we talked about that one day this week, that don't focus just on the behavior. You have to go behind the behavior
right.
to see what need or want or desire or interest that's trying to access. You know, when we look at a kid's behavior, you can't just judge behavior. The child's having a temper tantrum, there's some reason for the temper tantrum.
Right.
And you need to know what that is too.
Right.
Yeah, you
gotta
stop the tantrum. But you also have to investigate why the child is tantruming so it doesn't happen again.
Right, because it's through the understanding why that right. we're able to make a diagnosis and we're able to treat mm-hmm. what's actually going on.
Right.
You know, it's like you have a headache and so, oh, well, let's just give you aspirin.
Right.
Well, if you have a brain tumor and that's what's causing the headache, I'm sorry, but the aspirin
right.
isn't going to do anything.
Right.
So we need to know why the headache is happening or why the symptoms are happening, and then we can make sure that we provide the right treatment.
Right.
And so in children, that is especially challenging. That is especially difficult because they don't have the insight. They don't have the understanding and they're not as in tune with what's going on. That interaction between their internal world and their external world, they don't have as much of an insight there to know how to explain what's happening in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
So comorbidity in childhood is really it's really challenging.
It's a bigger challenge.
And we see and find that many times children end up being diagnosed with multiple conditions, perhaps for
right.
that reason.
Right.
Because we just
we don't know
for certain, and so we're saying it could be ADHD. It looks a little bit like anxiety as well.
Right.
So we're gonna, you know, because we have to make diagnoses if we
right.
want to be paid, and we want to, you know, insurance to cover it and things like that. So we end up making both diagnoses and saying, you know, we're going to have to work on both of these to see if we can make any difference and make any changes.
Right, and with children, the problem, and you kind of sort of introduce the topic, is that you have this you have a whole section of disorders that are called the neurodevelopmental disorders, and then you have mental illness.
Right.
And the neurodevelopmental disorders, it's pretty hard to argue that they are mental illness disorders.
Right.
I mean, the fact that a child is stuttering
Right.
Is a neurodevelopmental disorder. It's not a mental illness.
Right.
The fact that a child has a speech deficit or an intellectual deficit, it's not really a mental illness as such. And so in children, you have these neurodevelopmental disorders that can exist independently of a mental illness. So the child might be depressed and have a communication disorder.
Right.
Okay. So it's a little bit easier with children because of the neurodevelopmental disorders to have comorbid conditions.
Right. Yeah. And you know, that brings up a great point in that, you know, we do have these sets of conditions that those neurodevelopmental, most of the neurodevelopmental disorders, and when we say neurodevelopmental disorders, what we're talking about is a group, a chapter in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that identifies these particular diagnoses as neurodevelopmental disorders. Well, there's a lot of things in that category, such as intellectual disability, communication disorders, autism, but also ADHD, and things like that. And, you know, to me, we were talking about this earlier as we were preparing for this podcast, to me, autism, I think it's a bit of a stretch to call autism a mental illness.
Right, I do too.
It's a developmental disorder. It's a developmental condition, but it's not really a mental illness per se. It's not like depression. It's not like
anxiety.
It has some of those components.
Right.
And again, this is where we get into some of those challenges, is you have a child with autism or autism spectrum disorder, and we see some of the rigidity in thoughts, we see some of the repetitive behaviors and some of those things that look very OCD-like, say, which would fall into a different category of mental health problem.
Right.
And yet that's all contained within the diagnosis of autism.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really much more complicated than just saying, doing a blood test and saying, oh, well, you have hypoglycemia. Yeah. This is the treatment. It's much more difficult when it comes to mental health conditions, again, especially with children.
Right. And this is where you really need the knowledge and expertise of a professional.
Right.
Because somebody has to make the decision about which disorder is primary.
Right.
Okay, that's number one. And the second thing is, at the intervention, the level of intervention, which one do I want to start working on? And the professional should be able to sort that out.
Right.
We frequently will see children who have early onset bipolar disorder, and they're rampaging through the house, they're destroying property, they're attacking other individuals, they're irritable, they're dangerous. Well, most of those kids also meet criteria for oppositional defiant disorder.
Right.
But if you go, and this would be one of those essential differences. There's no medication for oppositional defiant disorder. So if you start dealing with that and you ignore the bipolar disorder, the early onset bipolar disorder, and you don't start mood stabilizers, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle that you're probably going to lose.
Right.
So some professionals say, no, we have to take care of the mood disorder first, or the whole problem of ADHD and a mood disorder. Where you have to begin by medicating the mood disorder before you medicate the ADHD.
Right.
Because if you give a child with a mood disorder a stimulant, you could make the mood disorder worse.
Right.
So these are decisions that professionals should be able to help you make. So, but it's an exceedingly important decision, especially in children.
Right. And that's why it's really important, like as you said, to see, you know, when you're taking your child to see someone, to see a child specialist.
Right.
Because adult specialists do wonderful work with adults, but they don't necessarily have the training to understand and experience for dealing with those kinds of issues in children. So I guess the bottom line with that is that parents, that's why sometimes you see, you go to different places and you get different diagnoses, you know, depending on how those symptoms are presented, how they're explained and how they're understood, you may end up with different diagnoses
and the training and background of the person you're seeing.
Right.
So this, but do consult, because consult with a professional if you're possibly dealing with more than one disorder, because it's a much more complicated picture, especially at the level of intervention.
Right.
So,
right.
Proceed cautiously.
Right. Now, in adults, it's a little bit different, only because again, adults can explain a little bit better.
Right.
They can give a little bit more information and hopefully have a little bit more insight into what's happening and why things are happening and what's going on with things.
And adults have a longer history. And right. when you get that longer history, you certain themes begin to emerge. When somebody's 30 years old and they're giving you the history of this disorder, it's clarified. Mm-hmm. If you follow the chronology of the disorder, it's easier to clarify it. With a child, you may have a 2 or 3 year history.
Right.
It's not enough time to extract themes that you want to deal with.
With fewer settings and fewer interactions with others, it makes it much more difficult.
Right.
So with adults, we still see comorbidity, mm-hmm. but it's a little bit easier to be precise when it comes to making those diagnoses. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to what can be comorbid with what, mm-hmm. I think that it's really fair to say that by and large, any mental illness can be comorbid with any other mental illness, with a few exceptions.
Broadly speaking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The most common error I think that people make is when they identify a comorbid relationship between bipolar disorder and major depressive disorder, for example. According to our diagnostic criteria, those two diagnoses cannot happen together. A person can be diagnosed with major depressive disorder, but as soon as a person has a manic episode, which is what's required for a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, as soon as you have that manic episode, the diagnosis of of major depressive disorder has to go away, and it is then and forever will be bipolar disorder. Right. Even if you never have another manic episode, even if every mood episode afterward is a depressive episode, doesn't matter. According to our diagnostic criteria, once you have a manic episode, that's it. Either manic or hypomanic.
Right.
Once you have that manic episode, your diagnosis forever then will be bipolar disorder, type 1 or type 2, depending on if it was a manic or hypomanic episode.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So there's that example. In the previous edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, Asperger's disorder, which no longer exists in the mm-hmm. manual, Asperger's disorder and ADHD couldn't be comorbidly diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
They advised against and said that you couldn't make those two diagnoses together because they said that the symptoms of ADHD that you're seeing are most likely a manifestation of the Asperger's disorder. And so you couldn't make those two diagnoses together. So again, there's few other, a lot of times what they'll do is that we will have rule outs. Like there's some diagnoses that are really challenging to differentiate. For example, schizoaffective disorder.
Right.
Schizoaffective disorder is basically schizophrenia, but during the psychotic episode, you're having a major mood-related episode, so either a manic episode or a major depressive episode during the time in which you're having your psychotic episode. Well, that would be schizoaffective disorder. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a major mood episode, like a manic episode or a major depressive episode, and during that episode you become psychotic, well, then your diagnosis is major depressive disorder or bipolar disorder severe with psychotic features. Mm-hmm. And so our diagnoses change depending on the timing and relationship between these two, the different symptoms.
Right.
It's challenging. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it's difficult, if not impossible, to differentiate that.
Yeah, and you can't, I mean, in the hands of a skilled clinician, you can do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make that determination and say, this is what I think is primary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to worry about these things. And we can do that sort of thing.
Right.
And it clarifies it for the patient. That's
right.
The most important thing, is that, okay, now it makes sense.
Right.
And we're going to approach this topic first. We're going to approach this problem first.
Right. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, most diagnoses can occur or can be made along with most other diagnoses, except again for those few exceptions. And what we look for in those scenarios is, even if there's an overlap in symptoms, what we look for is discernible episodes or discernible symptoms of each.
Right.
So, despite the confusing perhaps example I just gave of schizoaffective disorder and a major mood disorder with psychotic features, you can still be diagnosed with schizophrenia and major depressive disorder without being diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder or severe with psychotic features. If you have very clearly meet the criteria for schizophrenia, and then you very clearly have mood-related episodes, but the two never cross, then you could be diagnosed with both.
Right. Yeah.
So this is again where a lot of the confusion and a lot of the challenges come as it relates to making diagnoses. Right. And trying to identify what's going on with a person and why things change sometimes as treatment continues and we continue to work with someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they can change. You can add one.
Right.
You know, you could add another. You could have three.
Right.
You know, three different distinct diagnoses, or one could drop out.
Right.
And you're back to one. So this is a dynamic process.
Right.
Typically, it's not going to last forever. It's a dynamic process, it's constantly changing.
And let's be honest, I mean, a lot of times clinicians don't necessarily know exactly what to ask, and patients don't necessarily know exactly what to provide during those first few sessions so that you know the full picture, the full story. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge. Another way we have two other ways that we have comorbidity. One is comorbid mental illness and personality disorders.
Right.
We can have those two things happening at the same time. So a person can have a bipolar disorder, for example, and a personality disorder, like an antisocial personality disorder or a paranoid personality disorder. Yeah. So those two things can happen at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then we have the second way is instead of calling it comorbid, for some reason we call it co-occurring, which is a mental illness, whether it's a depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, anxiety, or a personality disorder, along with a substance abuse disorder.
Right.
And we call those co-occurring disorders or dual diagnoses.
Dual diagnoses.
And so we have a mental health condition and a substance abuse issue. And those two go together quite frequently.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's estimated that about 60% of people with bipolar disorder also have a substance abuse problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the percentage is almost as high for anxiety disorders, schizophrenia, ADHD, untreated ADHD, those with untreated ADHD are at risk for abusing substances.
Right.
So so we have a lot of those kinds of co-occurring, again, what we're referring to right now as comorbidities. So that can happen.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
So our job isn't easy sometimes.
Yeah, comorbidity issue can be tough on families and on patients.
It is. It absolutely is.
One of the difficult cases we had was a family member who had probably had schizoaffective disorder, maybe emerging schizophrenia, but the person also had a borderline personality disorder.
Right.
And so the underlying mental illness, the sort of recurring psychotic disorder, was really complicated because of the personality disorder.
Yeah.
And it made her very difficult to treat because.
Right.
When the personality disorder came out, you didn't want to be around this person.
Absolutely. And oftentimes we rely on the patient to give us some of that information.
Right.
And sometimes they're just able to give us that kind of information.
Right. And it takes a long time to sort it out. And, you know, if the personality disorder emerges, they may not want treatment.
Right.
They don't want treatment, but they need it for the schizoaffective disorder. So it presents a very complicated treatment package.
It does. And so so it's a great question, you know, whether this condition can be co-occurring with that condition. It is a great question because it's one we're asked often, especially when we have to make multiple diagnoses. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I learned early on and find myself having to tell patients frequently, you know, we think of something like Tourette's disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tourette's disorder, that movement disorder, the vocal tics and the motor tics, one of the things we know with Tourette's disorder is that 60% of kids with Tourette's disorder also are diagnosed with ADHD.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, 60% of kids with Tourette's disorder are also diagnosed with OCD.
Right.
About 50% of kids with Tourette's disorder are also diagnosed with major depressive disorder. Mm-hmm. About 30% of kids with Tourette's disorder are diagnosed with a learning disability.
Right.
So there are particular diagnoses, and it's probably because of the brain regions that are associated with these disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these disorders are, you know, just happen to go together. Mm-hmm. And
they share the same brain region.
Right. And so when it's not working right in one direction, we see a lot of these recurring and similar symptoms. Anxiety is another area that is just fascinating, because a kid or an adult or anyone can go from being diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder to obsessive compulsive disorder to a panic disorder to an agoraphobia, and you can just kind of shift around these, because anxiety is anxiety. Your symptoms, the symptoms that make up the diagnosis of anxiety is the same regardless of everything. It's the trigger, what causes the anxious response. Right. That's what differentiates the diagnoses. And so if it's this right now, but then it changes to that later on, your diagnosis will change.
Right. And where this becomes, you know, again, where it becomes important is with medication, because people always say, well, he's on too much medication. But frequently, a psychiatrist will medicate each disorder.
Right.
So if you have a mood disorder, you get an antidepressant. But if you also have ADHD, you're going to need a stimulant.
Right. Okay? Right.
So that's how patients end up on more than one medication, is you want to treat each disorder.
Right. Okay?
So you have multiple medications. It's not something we like to do, but if you have two conditions, each needs to be treated.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to talk about how we feel about that in another podcast. But all right. Well, I hope that provided some clarification about what comorbidity means, why you see it maybe as often as you do, and how we try to use it from our perspective to identify what's going on and to sort of cover bases, because it's not, I for the most part, I dislike having to give so many diagnoses, because it comes across as more uncertainty. That's, we use it more because of uncertainty than anything, especially with children. With adults, it's a little bit different, but especially with children.
But you're not sure.
We're not, you're not.
So you hedge your bets, and it's really not that. It's that you meet criteria for more than one disorder.
Right, right. And as they develop, it'll probably change.
It'll change across time.
Right. Yep. So, all right.
But a good topic.
Yeah.
Good question from the listener.
Absolutely. So send in more questions. If you're wondering about something, you know, send it in. We'll either address it on the morning show if we have, if it's something that we can address a little more succinctly. Mm-hmm. But if it's something that requires a little bit more conversation like this one, we'll cover it in our regular podcast we post on Saturday mornings. So, but thanks so much for listening. Like us on YouTube, on iTunes, write comments and share us with others so that we can get others involved.
Right? Yep.
That's good stuff. So, all right. Well, until next time, have a great weekend. Stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.